you ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Thanks for tuning in to the Niche Website Builders Show. First of all, I'd like to apologize for the audio and video quality on this episode. We had a technical issue that's now been resolved, and you'll see video and hear audio more like this going forward. In this episode, I speak to Doug Cunnington. Doug is a well-known figure in our industry and has been running a podcast and YouTube channel of his own for around 7 years now. He's also been building niche websites for longer than that. In this episode, I speak to Doug about when he first started, what drives him to continue creating content week in and week out. We talk about his views on the Google algorithm updates and Amazon commission structure changes that happen from time to time. He's gone through a number of these over the years. So we discuss kind of his views on that on an ongoing basis. We also discuss hyperlink building and other strategies for building niche websites. We also speak about his plans for 2021 and more. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as that will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel. Click on the bell to be the first to know when we release new episodes. Thank you and enjoy the show.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builder Show. Today, we're going to be talking to Doug Cunnington. If you've been in the building content site space for more than 15 minutes, you're probably aware of Doug Cunnington. He's a serial podcaster, a YouTube streamer, known for his calm and honest approach and sharing his knowledge. He also blogs over at nichewebsiteproject.com and is also somewhat famous for his invention of the keyword golden ratio, KGR, research method. Welcome, Doug. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Mark. It's a great pleasure, and that intro was amazing. It makes me sound very impressive.
Awesome. Thanks. So people have been in this business for more than 15 minutes now. They probably know who you are, but for those people that have been in this for less than 15 minutes, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I blog over at Niche Site Project, and I used to have a normal corporate worker bee job. I was in management consulting, and I did project management. And then back in 2013, I found the Smart Passive Income podcast just randomly. I wasn't into entrepreneurship. I wasn't thinking side hustles. I wasn't trying to make money on the side. And I got hooked, and I listened to probably all of Pat Flynn's podcast catalog at the time, read all his blogs. And I think within 6 weeks, I launched my first site, which was a total, mistake. It was so many mistakes I made, but it got me started along the way, and I stopped making those same mistakes. And within, I would say, 6 months or so, I had a site on Amazon Associates, earning a few hundred bucks and then up to several thousand per month pretty quickly. And that's kind of the way it was back in 2013. And I dabbled. I had some ups and downs, like all good SEOs. There's penalties, manual penalties. I made some big mistakes, learned from those mistakes. And then in 2015, I got laid off from my full-time job and decided to give it a shot full-time doing affiliate marketing and teaching some courses. So I've been doing that for, 5 years now. And I love being able to control my day and not have to worry about asking for time off. I can take vacations. I can spend time with family and have all that flexibility. So I branched out a little bit into podcasting, like you mentioned, and YouTube. So that's been really fun to take the same sort of content, put it into a different medium, and learn new stuff. So that's me.
Cool. Excellent. Yeah. Well, I definitely want to drill into a little bit more into some of those kind of successes and failures and kind of those early days as well. But we'll catch up on that a bit later. But before we get going, it'd really be good to hear a little bit about yourself outside of business. Kind of what do you do outside of work? What kind of interest do you have? What do you do?
One thing I talk about all the time is beer, which I do love quite a bit. And I wasn't a big beer drinker growing up. You know, a lot of people will
dabble.
Well,
when you were five, you mean?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I really didn't drink that much. But I got into homebrewing beer. And you may see, if people are watching video, there's a whole shelf of beer books right behind me. So I got into homebrewing beer quite a bit. And like, I guess I go off the deep end in many areas and really get obsessed. So I was drinking Coors Light at the time, and a friend got a homebrewing kit. And I was the only one that had a house, and I wasn't married. So we can make a mess in my kitchen and in my house. So we brewed over there at my place. And then the beer was awful, kind of like the first website that I built. The beer was awful. But we started brewing multiple batches before we even tried the first one. So we all sort of got obsessed. And that was 13 years ago. Eventually, I got into judging beer, which is a whole other, deeper topic. And it's very fun. It's a good way to sort of quote, take the fun out of beer drinking, where you're analyzing it and you're really going deep. But if you're into that stuff, and you're around people that are also into dissecting the details of a beer and a beer style, it's really fun. It helps you brew better beer, basically. So I have a kegerator out in the garage and enjoy beer, drinking it, brewing it, tasting it. However, right now, when we're recording this, it's January of 2021, and I'm doing dry January with my wife. And we're 7 days in. I feel great. I've been sleeping wonderfully. But yeah, it's like, okay, we got to break up the routine, which was normally, have a couple beers at the end of the day. So I'm into that sort of stuff. I'm into outdoor activities. So most days I'm probably walking outside, 5+ miles, unless there's a snowstorm or something, really unusual going on. So I have a dog. A lot of times I'll just walk around here, but I live in the Boulder County area, the Front Range of the Rockies here in Colorado. So there's a lot of great hiking, very close by in the mountains. So try to get out as often as I can, not as often as I should, but I try and hike quite a bit.
Cool. So do you need a qualification to become a beer judge?
Well, you have to take a test. You just have to have the interest in judging to go down that route and pursue it. But you do have to take a test. There's a few tests you have to take. I won't bore people with this, the big details, but basically at the end of the day, you're judging, or you're learning to judge beer that people have homebrewed. And then you want to be able to give them feedback like, hey, this matches the style. It's kind of like the dog competitions, where there's a specific style for a beer, like a pale ale, or an English bitter, for example. And if you brew an American IPA, it could be a great American IPA, but it's not a very good English bitter. It's too hoppy, it's the wrong kind of hops, there's all these issues. So you have to be able to give feedback in a clear, concise way in kind of a time-boxed situation. So the judging and the test to become a judge is very difficult. And, I worked on it. Many, many hours of beer drinking and studying, reading those books behind me. So
it's a hard life, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I know you're really keen as well on these kind of offline detox periods. You kind of spend a month at a time just taking time out. What is it you feel like that really gives you? Do you clearly feel like you benefit from it?
I think so. Well, and I've only done a couple of them where it's been an extended amount where I'm actually like offline. And that was a trip that I took to Alaska. I drove here from Colorado. My parents joined me. It was back in the summer of 2019. And I was driving through Canada, which is, you know, there's not many cell phone towers on that drive. So there's huge periods where you're just not getting any service, which was great. And then in general, I try to, you know, not keep up with email too much on my phone. Mark, I know you have sent me messages on Facebook Messenger, and it could be days before I get back to you. Like, that's just kind of how I've adopted my relationship with like online stuff. And social media, I usually just use it as a time waster. I don't use it as a tool, which, I mean, that's probably the opposite of what you should do. But the point is, I don't use it that much because I'm not wasting that much time. So I think most recently I was off most of December and a good chunk of November as well. I did a little bit. I did, you know, enough to keep up content on YouTube and on the podcast. But really, I try to unplug as much as possible and go out and do stuff, spend time with people. And I'm in the luxurious position that I could do that now. But it really lets your mind rest, or at least for me, because it's really easy to stay busy. There's always like more things on the task list. If you want to, you could always make up more things, more optimization in your processes, on your websites, with the content. Like, you could always figure out how to tweak things and stay busy. And I am very good at doing that. So it's really important for me to, you know, unplug. So I was back in Georgia, the Atlanta, Georgia area over the holidays. And really, I would plug in my computer maybe a couple hours a day and maybe check my email, just make sure nothing was on fire. Sometimes, right, I was like, I'm not going to check my email for a couple days just to see what happens. Turns out everything's fine. Usually nothing really bad happens. Now, back when my corporate gig, you can't take those liberties like that. But in this case, I really come back to the office with like more ideas. Like, I'm rejuvenated. I feel a little rested. My brain got to rest a little bit. And I should probably do it more often. There's a guy locally here. He was on the Tim Ferriss podcast. I think his name is Brad Feld. And he mentioned that he and his wife take, I think it's a week every quarter, where they go to a cabin. He's like a billionaire or something, so I don't think I could do this. So they go to like a awesome remote cabin in the mountains, and they literally like lock away their phones. They don't have like any data, no internet, and they read books, they hang out, they do like normal stuff, probably spend a lot of time outside. And that sounds awesome to me, to just like have a regular schedule where you know you're going to get that detox and let your brain rest.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. And I guess onto your, like, you know, organizational skills and stuff, you know, I know that you're a project management professional, and you said, you know, that's kind of, you're good at that stuff. I always get the sense when you talk about it on your podcast, on your stream, that, you know, you're still quite passionate about that stuff. Or like, you know, you mentioned it on your website as well. So you don't deal with it a lot. I mean, I guess it affects your day-to-day working, but you still seem really passionate. I mean, is there stuff you miss from that? Is that you still feel passionate about project management as a thing?
I think so. I mean, I wouldn't have said that. So it's interesting that you mention it. I think I probably internalized a lot of those ideas. So if you're doing something more than a couple times, you could probably put a system around it. If you're, for example, hiring someone at Upwork, one of my friends, he used to create like a new job listing every time, even though most of it was similar, and he just needed to change like one or two spots. And it's like, you got to use the same template. Like, why are you rewriting a few hundred words every time you're going to hire someone? So part of it is like the engineer in me too. So I have a computer engineering degree. I never actually use that specifically other than some software skills, but in general, engineers, right? They hate to waste stuff. They want to make things efficient if they can. So I think part of it comes back to that. The other day, I had to redo some work. There was some issue with a backup with some people that I was doing some work with, and I had to redo some work. And that was very frustrating. Probably one of the most annoyed times that I've had since I started working for myself, because I could control a lot of things when I'm working for myself. But it was just one of those mistakes that happens with a backup and a migration and blah, blah, blah. So the project management portion, I guess, I am still passionate about. And then when we take a step back to, say, 2013, I was thinking, hey, I'm going to start this blog. And my wife was like, I don't know. Sounds like other people are already doing that. Mm-hmm. Like, do you have anything unique? And for weeks, I was like, no, I guess not. I mean, I'm just going to try to do what they're doing. And I've only been doing this for a few months. But then I realized I got this PMP, the Project Management Professional Certification, which is relatively difficult to get. It's one of those prerequisites for a lot of jobs out there. It's a good set of skills to have. And just the fact that you like got the certification shows that you, you know, complete stuff, costs, you know, probably a few hundred, couple thousand bucks, depending on how you do it. And I realized if I couple the branding with the content that I'm teaching along with the project management, well, that's something interesting. And it turns out project managers and IT professionals and other, you know, people in the world that like you and I come from, Mark, basically they're interested in making money on the side. They usually have a good salary, so they're able to purchase products. So from a branding standpoint, I was like, oh, this is great. I'm attracting hopefully people that are in the same demographic as me. They're going to want to buy stuff just like I want to buy stuff to learn how to make money on the side. So it all fits together really well. So it's great because I could talk project management stuff. People understand the lingo and they're like, oh yeah, I got my PMP too, or I'm looking to get my PMP. So it all kind of melds together really well.
Yeah, cool. Makes sense. So, you know, you followed that well-trodden path of kind of Pat Flynn to first finding your feet in, well, first realizing you can make money online, right? And it was a genuine thing and not a hoax. So, like, how did it feel? Like, tell us a little bit, you know, about how you were actually feeling, like, when you kind of decided to make that leap and it, from leaving a safe kind of corporate life to stepping into the unknown.
Well, I got a little bit lucky in that I got laid off, I guess, just like Pat Flynn, right? If I didn't get laid off, I probably would still have the job because I had a ton of flexibility. I was safely in that, I would say, a dead zone of like middle management. So I had a team of people working for me. It was highly unlikely that I was going to get promoted to like a director position just because I'm a average achiever overall. And I wasn't pushing that hard. You have to do all sorts of nonsense to get that sort of level of director or higher, at least at the company that I was at. And I think that, I mean, you have to do really well. The whole org structure is, I mean, it's shaped like a pyramid. There's not that many positions. So I got laid off. So I was like, well, I know I can make a replacement salary. So why don't I give this a shot? As far as how I felt, I mean, it was really scary. We're pretty financially conservative. We are very risk averse. And I had a, you know, good six-figure job where benefits were excellent. I had plenty of time off. I mean, you know, some companies you may get, I don't know, I don't even know. You may get a couple of weeks or whatever, but in the consulting world, usually you get like 4 or 5 weeks off. Plus you can save up, you know, some of your sick days and stuff like that. So, I mean, I could take plenty of time off and I worked remotely as well. So I had a ton of flexibility. I was actually traveling a little bit as well. So the scared part kind of never goes away, although I'm getting close to that now where I'm not as scared. And you're not sure if you could really pull it off because even if you've started, you know, several sites, most of them worked out, or maybe you started an agency and you're doing different pieces of work. You know, certain things work, but every time you try something new, there's more failure points.
Yeah.
Things get more complicated when you hire more people. I'm sure you know that, Mark. And you have all these different failure points that pop up. plus external factors that have nothing to do with your performance or how you're able to execute on your plan. So I guess after a few years, I was like, oh, I guess I can do it. Everything's not going to work out, but I only need, you know, half, 25% of my projects to work out, because the ones that do are usually pretty good. And like I said before, I mean, I'm kind of a middle of the road performer. I never got like the greatest reviews at work, you know, safely average.
Cool. So when was it you'd say that you first felt that you became aware of your entrepreneurial spirit, or would you even consider yourself to be an entrepreneur? There's kind of different folk in our group, right? So I sort of consider myself to be an entrepreneur because I have to continuously stop myself from starting new projects. And you know, I like starting things and building things. But you know, maybe you found your thing, and it's more that you like creating content, you like getting an audience and running courses, but you're not really, don't identify as an entrepreneur. Like, how do you feel in that case? Is that you, or?
I guess it was probably just in the last couple years, so maybe 2 to 3 years of running my own business successfully, continuing to grow and facing different changing market conditions and that sort of thing, where I realized, oh yeah, I guess I can identify as an entrepreneur. When I peel back the onion and I look deeper, when I was about 12 or 13, I started like a lawn care business because I wanted to buy a CD player. And my dad said, well, that's great. You want to get a CD player? Actually, I asked him to buy it. And he's like, okay, if we get you a CD player, how are you going to buy CDs? I was like, I have no idea. He's like, we'll come up with a plan. And I mapped out on a piece of paper. I actually kind of remember the spiral notebook where I like wrote down, all right, CDs cost this much and I can cut grass in the neighborhood here. So I came up with a plan, brought it to him, and he was like, okay, now you do it and then you could buy the CDs, whatever, right? So the next morning, I went around pushing the lawnmower around the neighborhood, and I would stop at the lawns where they needed to be cut like that day, you know, that looked kind of awful. I would go knock on the door and say, hey, you want me to cut your grass? It looks like it needs it. And then I got some jobs like that day to like do stuff. So I did that for several years. And again, I didn't realize that I had that sort of spirit. And then, you know, I went to college to be an engineer, and you kind of get into that sort of mindset of the, you know, the worker bee, the corporate ladder, and like, all right, if I just stick in with this, I can maybe get promoted to a manager after a few years. And then you get kind of roped into that mindset. And then eventually, you know, after finding some podcasts and hearing other people who were doing much better than me, and I had a good job, they were doing much better than me, and they were working for themselves. There's like a removal of all that waste of the, you know, the middle management that I was deep in. And after a couple of years, like I said, I realized, oh, I do have some of these skills. And it wasn't too long ago, I guess last year, there's a small business accelerator, an entrepreneurship accelerator that is, I guess it's based in Massachusetts, but they have something out here in Longmont. So I was a mentor for, you know, a small business that was trying to get off the ground here. Pretty cool program called E for All, Entrepreneurship for All. So I guess at the point where I'm coaching and mentoring, you know, small businesses that are trying to get started, I can safely say I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah, cool. That sounds cool. So I like that. Okay. So what would you say is that continues, you know, to drive you, you know, on the path that you're on from like both a, you know, personal and from a kind of business perspective?
That's a good question. Initially, it was so that I wouldn't have to get a corporate job again, because once you get a taste of working for yourself and not having to deal with getting permission and approval to do like the smallest little new idea, I just can't go back to that. I don't think I can, unless it was just like an excellent company that gave me a lot of autonomy. And I think that's the thing, like having that autonomy is super helpful for my personal happiness. I think that is one of the key things for happiness, where like you're challenged a little bit and you have autonomy to work on the things that you want to work on. Those are some of those key things. And if you read those happiness books, right? Yeah. So that was the initial portion of it. And, you know, nowadays, I probably wouldn't need to get another job if I, you know, stopped earning any money online. And that's a great place to be. And that's another topic I get into often, is financial independence. And I don't know, like, what else is driving me. I know, you know, we'll keep talking about Pat Flynn here. So he'll say his purpose is to serve people and that sort of thing. I don't have that drive. I don't have that service drive. I hear them talk about it, like other people. And it's great. They're providing tons of value, but I don't feel like it's my service to like just help other people randomly. I mean, he's also making like millions of dollars a year. So, I mean, there's more complexity than just like to serve people. So I have not gone down the route to identify like my purpose or what I'm trying to do. And I think, you know, that's part of, you know, some of the struggle that I have. And I think no matter what position you're in, like you're trying to figure out like exactly what you want to do, why you want to do it, so that you have the drive. Now, I can tell you, I really love having the flexibility to take time off. So like that Alaska trip, or taking most of December off just because, hey, I want to take a break and spend time with my family. So I think those couple things, autonomy, flexibility, kind of keep myself challenged by doing new things, like other platforms for content, for example, or just learning, you know, new pieces of information that I could try and implement. Maybe it's around marketing, maybe it's around hiring a team or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, you clearly enjoy what you're doing enough, and you kind of got it in your head, a kind of a mission of sorts, because you know, you've been doing it for a long time now, and I guess you wouldn't have stuck to it if you weren't enjoying it.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I really enjoy, you know, certain pieces like creating new courses and or just material that is sort of functioning as a teaching aid. So that could be on YouTube. The courses are great, though, because I know people will actually go through them and consume them. The big problem with YouTube is there's so many distractions, right? On YouTube. I mean, I'm a consumer of YouTube, and you have your feed and your suggested videos. And if you're bored for like 2 seconds, you click on the next thing. So I know, even though I love the YouTube channel, I love people, you know, watching the content, even if I like a creator and I like the video, there's a strong chance I'm not even going to watch the whole thing. It's crazy. So I know other people are in the same boat, but with courses, people actually consume the content because they have the psychological sort of draw to complete something that they've paid for, and they're implementing it, which is even more important than just consuming the content. So love the courses, love creating like different pieces of content. And then it also gives me a platform to like talk to people like you, Mark, and other, you know, up and coming entrepreneurs and other, you know, influencers and agency folks and software creators, stuff like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I assume you get pleasure then out of seeing people taking your courses, finding success, that kind of thing too.
Yes. Yeah. Those success stories are awesome, especially if they are, you know, literal students of some of the work that I've done. It's great to say, yeah, like if you do the work, you actually get the results.
Yeah. I think it's pretty cool that you've identified that you don't want to be kind of in the services business, and that, because it's so easy to go down that route when you're somebody who wants to help people, who wants to, you're a problem solver, you want to help people get where they want to. Like, I'm like that. It's so easy to fall down to like helping people by offering a service or, you know, physically doing, you know, I think it's cool that you managed to distance yourself a little bit from that, but still maintain that will, that want to be able to help people, you know.
Yeah. And I know, I mean, that was one of the business models that I tried to get into right when I got laid off. I tried a few things all at once, which that was kind of a mistake. You get stressed out if you got too many plates spinning. So I realized that I didn't really want to work in the services industry because of the clients, basically. So the clients and students, some people say, oh, you still work with students, but it's a much different relationship most of the time. Yeah. And when I have worked with clients, it was always, I always felt like I had not just one boss that I had to please, but several. And it would, it made me stressed out. And the people that could do it, like, you know, you and Adam, of course, it's very impressive. I'm sure it's not easy at all. And I was just like, okay, I could do some other stuff instead. I'm doing pretty good with the you know, affiliate sites. I'm going to push on that for a little while. And then when I came around to, you know, creating courses and content, teaching it, then I had like great case studies of my own work to share before the success stories of my students.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm hesitant to say like what keeps you up at night, because you already told me, you know, you're not drinking the beer and you're sleeping a bit better. But you know, what are those things that you feel are kind of are out of your control that like could affect your lifestyle as you kind of want it to be, like as it is now going forward?
Google algorithm updates are always, you know, a risk out there, even for people that don't do link building at all. I mean, I think that's more and more common where someone has a site, there's hardly any links going to it or none, and they're still impacted by an algorithm update. So that's a little bit of a risk, but you know, that was always kind of something that I knew was out there. So I'm not as worried about that. And that's part of the reason I have a YouTube channel and a podcast and have you know, a lot of the traffic that I get, at least for my personal brand, the Niche Site Project blog, a lot of traffic comes from multiple places, which is great. It kind of removes a little bit of that risk, or I guess hedges some of that risk for us. And some of the other stuff is just, you know, normal things where I know I have a lot of work to do. So if I am, say, putting out a bunch of new YouTube videos, for example, recently I put out a new playlist on the keyword golden ratio. And that was something like 7 videos. And I was, you know, if I woke up in the middle of the night, which would happen more often when I was drinking more beer, I would think, oh yeah, like maybe I should put that into the script, or oh, I need to record those tomorrow. So the same kind of silly stuff that would pop up before. And it's more like I'm a busybody, so I'm thinking about things. If I don't write them down, so I have like a notebook here for the people that are listening to audio only. I have a notebook here, and there's just like, you know, a bunch of listed items where I just get, as long as I can get it out of my head, I won't worry about it anymore. So it's the times where I've like listed it out and then I ignore it and I don't do it, where I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'm like, oh man, I really got to get on that. And then, you know, the other part is because I have been creating so much over the past few years and started new sites, sold some sites, and just I keep moving forward and I look at my peers who are also doing the same thing. It's really easy to just keep pushing, even if you don't have to. So like I said, I'm in a great position where like if I didn't make any more money, that would be okay. I'd have to find something else to do, of course. But at the end of the day, it's like, I don't have to keep I don't have to like put out 5 new courses. I don't have to keep earning more than I did the previous year, which is just the tendency that we have to do over and over again. And then it's like, okay, why am I doing this? Like, would I rather do something else? So I don't know. Is that something that you've thought about deeper? Like, hey, once I hit a spot, like what I'm going to do?
I guess so. I mean, it's ever changing, I think, for you know, for us. So we kind of have ideas, and then that things change, like things have gone better than we'd hoped. So now we've kind of got different goals for our business, like Niche Website Builders specifically. But yeah, I think it's fluid. Like, I think it is for everybody, probably. Some ideas you had 5 years ago, you move on, you get older, and those things change. I think you just got to be accept that that's the case. But I think we have goals and kind of plans, but yeah, willing to be flexible and change for those, yes, as well.
And I think that's key. You know, you don't know like the different phases you'll go through. We were a lot more into, you know, travel, you know, several years ago, but we haven't been traveling as much. So we kind of got a break just through our life situation. And there's a good chance we may start, you know, traveling a little bit more. We really like to see, you know, more of the country. and, you know, go to new places. I have been to all 50 states, which is a cool fact, but there's, you know, huge states where I haven't been to, you know, different portions of it. So there's a lot of things to see, experiences to go through. So I think, I don't even know what the original question was, but yeah, traveling more could be a good thing to do.
I think we moved on. It was kind of more about your, like, your fears around, like, your future and kind of what, but that's cool. I mean, you know, maybe you should do the, you know, all the counties of the UK next, you know, if you've done all the states of America, maybe it's all the counties of the UK. It'll take you like a day to get around them. So, you know, okay. Cool. Okay. So I was checking back in your YouTube channel, right? I was checking back at the videos and the oldest videos I wanted to find. And the oldest one I could find was June 2014, which was, and I know that's not the first one because it was the reader Q&A part two. So I at least know there was a part one to that. But also someone commented on that video saying, I've watched all your new videos and they're great. I pop back to your older stuff. You've come a long way. So I really want to see Q&A part one, yeah, because like, where's, yeah, wondering where that's gone. So, but you've been doing this about 7 years, right? Which was kind of mapped. So, you know, what happened to those old videos? And, you know, how long have you been doing this?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I kind of remember that Q&A. I think the first Q&A could have been just a blog post. Uh-huh. And then I recorded a video for the next one. And gosh, I wish I would have kept doing videos from the very beginning. So if you go back through the archive, you'll see like one in, like, what did you say, June of
2014? Yeah.
14?
Yeah.
And then you may see another one at the in the fall of 2014. And then I think there's maybe like one in 2015. And then at the end of 2016, I started doing more videos. If I would have done more videos early on, I would be, you know, so far ahead of where I am now. And I mean, that it's actually a long time ago now that we're looking back, but just having a little bit of that head start, channels grew faster back then. The algorithm was a little bit different. And if I would have had a bunch of videos on keyword research, for example, like they probably would have done really well and my channel would be much bigger. Now, it does get back to the point of like, what am I trying to do? And is bigger and bigger and bigger like the thing that I want to do? And I know that answer is no. Like, I just don't want to do that. But at the same time, those early videos are funny to go back to. And yes, I used to be, I say, scared of the camera. It would take me so long to do just a simple like 5-minute video. I would, you know, set up the camera. I didn't know what to say. They are rough. I think the audio is probably terrible. So yeah, I've come so far. And if I can give anyone advice, if you're thinking of starting a YouTube channel or a podcast or whatever, like, just start right away. It's going to be really ugly and it's going to be painful to go through. But the sooner you get past that point, the better off you're going to be. Everyone goes through it. Some people have maybe performing skills, like maybe they did some sort of drama or plays or something growing up. I didn't do any of that stuff. I was a nerdy like math and science kid. So I would hardly even talk in class. If you have like a background in performance, you'll probably be able to jump right in. If you don't, you know, then it just takes a little time, maybe a couple months of producing content and you'll get much, much better. But you have to suffer through those early days. There's no way around it. There's no shortcut for that.
I think it's the same for everything, right? But it's just a bit more public when you're in front of the thing. But yeah, cool. And yeah, I guess the other thing I noticed, you know, scrolling through the feed from your old YouTube, from your current YouTube channel, but from some of the older videos. Now I can see videos on Amazon rate cuts, Google algorithm changes, and you know, it was clear that you've been through kind of many cycles, and it was like watching a repeat, you know. So I guess, you know, my question to you is like, you know, you've been through this for a number of years. You've seen this cycle of change going, coming and going. You know, what do you think? You know, what have you learned over that kind of period? I guess, and do you feel that you may be, you're kind of more resilient to some of the changes as a result of seeing things happening again in cycles, and yeah. Tell us a little bit about that.
I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. Because I've gone through a few of these cycles and received penalties and had to work my way through it, went down to zero more than once, where revenue went down, traffic went down, all the sites are penalized and you're just standing around trying to figure out what to do with the disaster around you that you put time and money, capital, a lot of thought into. It turns out usually things work out if you just keep moving forward. So I know I've had other friends and peers who went through the same stuff and then they weren't able to recover yet. And for some of them, it's still been a few years where, you know, maybe they were making 10, 15K a month and it went down to, you know, $100 per month. And they will be able to fight through it. They had, you know, potentially other life circumstances where they couldn't spend as much time on it as I could. But usually I've been able to do something else and do something else that's bigger and better. So I guess I just realized that it's not the worst thing in the world. Change is going to happen. There's going to be, you know, shifts in the marketplace. And by the way, that's for any business, right? It doesn't matter if you're doing online business. If you open a restaurant, brick and mortar, well, now's not a great time to start a restaurant probably, but if you were going to start a restaurant, there could be some construction road project that now takes most of the traffic away from your restaurant. There's external factors you just can't control. If you're in the maybe healthcare industry, right, there are regulations and rules that may pop up. So there's always some risk out there. And, you know, it may seem maybe more risky for certain businesses or certain ways to run a business, but there's always going to be something. So I realize that. And we do have the luxury of running our own business, and you have to deal with that extra risk, that uncertainty. And it's not for everyone, by the way. It's not the greatest thing in the world if you are not good at dealing with uncertainty and the stress and steering the ship and figuring out like the vision of where you're trying to go. It can be really overwhelming for someone. So again, I forgot the question, but I think I answered it somewhere in there.
Yeah, it's talking about going through the cycles of, you know, of change. But I guess in some ways I found it comforting that, you know, I think there was an Amazon affiliate change in 2017, which people thought was the end of the world, you know, and things, the business move, things move on. Like I felt it was comforting seeing, you know, there's been all these changes, but there's still a way to make money online, and that's never really going to go away. And like you said, alluded to earlier with, I think, the project management stuff, you know, you're learning skills that are transferable. So as long as you're doing SEO, as long as you're learning SEO, as long as you're learning how to build content sites or whatever, there's always going to be a way to make money online, because, you know, the internet's not going to go away overnight. So if you've got skills on how to build traffic to a site, then if you can build traffic to a site, then there's going to be some way to monetize it in the future, whatever that is. So, yeah, I found it kind of comforting looking through those videos and seeing almost, you know, you could have just put it, I was looking at the videos from 2016, but they could have been 2020, and it, you know.
Right.
We're still here now.
Yep. And I think you're right. I mean, that's one of the things that I say, like, if you go down the route of trying to create an affiliate site or a site that just shows maybe display ads, maybe you just keep it really small, really specific, you're still going through like a full iteration of like the life cycle of a website. And you should be able to take those skills and transfer them to another business somehow or another. You could provide a service, right? So let's say you don't have a full-time job and you've lost all your sites. You need to make some money. You can build websites for people. People will pay a lot of money for you to build a website for them. And then maybe you know how to do keyword research. Maybe you know how to do KGR keyword research. People pay for all that stuff. And then all on the line, right? Content, you know, WordPress development, all those little things are skills that you can use in the future. So I mentioned before, I was never like a top performer. I still think I'm not. I just have like a unique set of skills, and I'm fairly stubborn to keep working on things even when it gets hard. And I just keep my head down, keep pushing through. So that's been really helpful.
I think it's often said that, you know, the most common form of failure is giving up too soon. Right? Well, most common reason for failure is giving up too soon. You just got to keep pushing on and doing the right things and yeah, something good will come out of it in the end. So yeah, that's a good message, I think. So when you look back over the last kind of 7 years or so of doing what you're doing, you know, what would you say, what were the highlights of, or some of the biggest successes over that period?
Sure. I've sold a couple sites for over six figures. And I think the one I could talk about, the most popular one, is Project Go White Hat. And that was the end of 2016 to 2017 or so. And one of my friends, Rob Atkinson, had a site that was built with private blog networks, or PBNs, which is a gray hat link building technique. And it's a little bit more risky. And we kind of had an idea to convert that site over to a white hat link building site. So I was pretty good at getting guest posts, and we partnered up. We had the plan to sell the site. We were going to convert it over, sell the site, and, you know, obviously share the wealth there. So we sold it for, I think, $235, and that was roughly in like February, March of 2017. We worked with Empire Flippers, which was great. And the unfortunate part is that coincided with the 2017 commission rate change. So when you peel back the details, we probably lost about six figures of the sales price because of the commission rate change. So fairly devastating when you look at it that way. We still like had something, put more value into it and sold it, which was awesome. So that was probably one of the bigger things that I've worked on. And I worked hard on documenting that in an interesting way. I should probably like go back to it and maybe like get some people to read it, because it's kind of a cool story. It still applies, like all the principles, all the things that I talked about in that case study, even though the dollar amounts would be different now because we've gone through now two commission rate changes. So things are a little bit different. But I could tell you, I know for that specific niche, there would be plenty of other affiliate offers that we could have gotten into, and courses which would have, I think now that site could be earning more money than it was even a few years ago, just because we would be able to offer better affiliate products and get paid more for those products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
And then I'll hit another highlight. One thing that we've mentioned is I have, a couple courses. In the beginning, back in 2013, I knew I didn't want to just run a blog niche site project for the fun of it. I knew I wanted to have products from the very beginning. So I was selling something within the first, couple months. I didn't realize how important that was to, split my revenue and earn from different sources, have an email list. Everyone talks about email lists, and they may not be great for every kind of site, but when you're selling courses, when you're teaching content and that sort of thing, it's really valuable to have that email list. So from the beginning, I was selling my own courses and content. And when I look back, whenever there was a commission rate change, whenever there was some other change, I knew I was making the other half of my money, or maybe a little bit less, from selling my own courses. So I've never had a six-figure launch, but I've had, a couple launches in the, 50,000, 70,000 range, I guess more than a couple. So that's always great to, launch a product. And then, I don't talk about this stuff often, but you hear from people that are selling courses on courses, and they'll say, oh, I made, $40,000 in one day, stuff like that. And that's the kind of stuff that I haven't talked about, but it's pretty interesting. Great headlines, but I'm not trying to sell that kind of stuff,
Yeah. For sure. And I mean, it sounds impressive too, but of course it is, but you don't realize, or shouldn't forget, is that a lot of time goes into that course, right? So it may sound good that you've earned $40,000 in a day, but you spent months kind of building that course in the first place, which kind of allowed you to then sell it and make $40,000 in a day. So
it's, and to pepper on the actual facts on that, it's like, it takes a long time to create the content, shoot the videos and all that. I launched that course probably 8 times before I got to that level. So that's like 2 years of iteration over and over again. And it wasn't like, hey, I'm going to tweak a couple things here. It was like, all right, we tried this. Now I'm going to overhaul it. And then I'm going to try something totally different. So yeah, not only was it a lot of work, I kind of said it in passing. It was a tremendous amount of work over like 2 years.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. There's no such thing as an overnight success, right?
Yeah.
Although it was what I was saying, the overnight success took me 10 years or something. Yeah, so I wanted to talk a bit more about the courses that you're currently, well, you're doing now, but you kind of launched initially in 2020. So I know that you launched Multi-Profit Site kind of middle-ish of last year, and also a couple of mini courses like the Haro mini course and the site growth plan. So, I mean, should we start with the Multi-Profit Site? Like, you know, what was the inspiration behind that course? And can you tell us a little bit more about it?
After Amazon changed the commission rates in, April of 2020, I knew I needed to go back and sort of rejigger and add more material to some of the stuff I was teaching before, which was really all about the Amazon Associates program. So Multi-Profit Site is a step-by-step framework using, you know, templates and systems that I've used over the years. Students have used them to great success, and it takes you from finding a niche and doing keyword research, setting up your site, writing the content, promoting it, and then growing, scaling, potentially selling your site. So it covers the full range of, hey, I have an idea and I want to, or maybe even you don't have an idea yet, right? So it takes you all the way from the beginning. The cool part with it is it's, you know, going back to that first product that I had in 2013, like it's just been iterated over time and more has been added to it. So obviously I take out the stuff that it doesn't apply anymore, but as I've gone through the years, I realize, okay, these kinds of techniques, they're not going to be timeless like some of the others, which are potentially maybe more, I don't want to say boring, but I will say the word boring. It's like the core work that we do usually is fairly straightforward. It's about content and link building. Like that, those are the two things most of the time. Yeah, you can dive into specific areas and we do that in the course. But I mean, really, it comes down to a couple simple concepts. And if you take a step back, you probably can stay within the guides of what Google likes, within the guides of what Amazon likes as well. But the thing is with Multi-Profit Site, we go deeper into other profit sources, right? So it's right there in the name of the course. And you're looking at other affiliate programs outside of Amazon. So that could be, you know, niche specific for your, you know, topic area. Maybe there's a boutique kind of brand that you can work with directly. There's a lot of affiliate programs out there. You just have to go hunt around. And display ads are, you know, normally going to be able to get you, depending on your content, you know, 30 to 50% of your revenue. And that's what I've seen from, you know, recent students through the course as well. So the big thing that I really emphasize is to find digital products for people to promote. The thing is with digital products, you end up usually with a better commission rate because the margins are quite high on a digital product. So we're talking courses, we're talking software. And if you have like some very obscure, weird niche, you may not be able to find software to sell. But usually if you look around, you could probably find something. Now courses, there's courses on almost everything. Once you start looking around, there's courses on all sorts of obscure topics. There are, actually, I'm not into woodworking yet, but I got a Christmas gift and it's like, it's a little pocket hole jig. I don't know. Do you do any woodworking, Mark?
I went on a course once. That's about it. Yeah.
All right. So I had, no visibility into the woodworking world, but like anything, there are channels with millions of followers over on YouTube. There's podcasts, there's websites with all these plans. And there are, of course, courses on woodworking that if you have a site on, you know, tools or home projects or something like that, you can sell these courses on woodworking. So that's just a specific example that came up naturally in the last couple of days, just with stuff that I'm into.
Cool. That makes sense. And you're planning on, you're relaunching that next, well, it's next week now as we speak, but it'll be this week as this video or podcast goes live. So.
That's right. January 11th through the 15th is the new year launch, where I'll have some extra bonuses and some, you know, cool stuff that, you know, you don't normally get.
So we'll put a link in the show notes for that course for next week too. Or when you listen to this week, so get over and check out the course once you get the chance. Tell us a little bit about the mini courses as well and the Haro course. Like, now what is Haro and what does that cover?
Sure. And before I answer that, I will say, if it's in the future, anytime, and you're not listening the week that this podcast comes out, then you can still check out Multiprofit site as well. So just follow the same link. The other courses. So last year I started to create some smaller courses, not the huge flagship, you know, takes several weeks to go through. I realized a lot of people wanted to solve a specific problem and they wanted to get all the content right away and just go through it, say, in a weekend. They don't want, you know, 14 units. They don't want 8 hours of content. They just want to learn exactly what they need to do to solve their problem. So the first one is site growth plan. One of the most common questions that I get is around, hey, I have a site. It's been stuck at this revenue and this traffic level for a little while. I'm not sure what to do. I'm not sure how to assess where it's at or anything like that. So site growth plan takes you down that path and you analyze your site where it's at. You figure out where you want it to go. And then that helps you prioritize the different things that you could work on. Again, a lot of the stuff we work on falls into two categories, you know, content or link building. So the gap analysis, which is, you know, a business analysis tool, you go through it for site growth plan initially. And honestly, just going through that process has helped a lot of people where they never thought to do an analysis in that way. And, you know, people can look it up and see what a gap analysis is. But once you do that, it's really clear how you can prioritize your tasks with the content and the link building so that you know what you should work on first to get the most return in the shortest amount of time. And then you can go down the list. It's really important, whether you're starting a new site or you're trying to grow a site, to have like some positive momentum. There's nothing worse than doing a bunch of work and then you see no feedback in a positive or negative direction. So it's really good if you can do something and see a quick reaction, a quick return on that. So site growth plan, like I said, takes you through that gap analysis, takes you through that plan. And I've seen good results so far on a site that I was implementing the plan on from 2019 to 2020. The traffic was up something like 40%. And this site had 25 posts initially. I bought it. 25 posts, I think it made about $1,500, $1,600 in 2019. I added 8 articles, optimized, did a couple internal linking things, standard stuff. And then we saw that 40% bump. In 2020, it made, I think, about $2,600. So just a small scale site. We're not talking about adding, you know, 400 articles or any kind of crazy thing. It was 8 articles and we saw nice growth. I need to do more with that site, by the way. So that's site growth plan. And I mean, it's gone really well as far as, you know, seeing results for those students out there.
Yeah, I think it can be, like you say, it can be disheartening when you're putting lots of work in and not seeing results, and you kind of have that plateau. But that plateau is kind of natural as well, isn't it? Because just to set, you know, expectations is like not always, you're not going to see straight results. You want to see a trend where things are going upwards. But you know, in my experience over the years, not just with niche sites, but just with SEO in general, is that you see, you see long periods of not much, and then you kind of see big jumps. It's very rarely a continual, slow, gradual increase. It's kind of, you kind of get jumps, and that's kind of an expectation. I think people don't have, you know, or realize that's the case. They kind of expect to do something and see a result. It's not always the case. That's true.
Yeah, that hockey stick growth is just, you know, very rare, but occasionally. An interesting thing that I've seen is with the algorithm updates, especially with a site that's like growing pretty well, an algorithm will come around and actually knock the site a little bit, but it's growing so well that it just appears to be like plateauing. And yeah, then another update will come around and then you'll see that, you know, more of an uptick, and it's just kind of a one-time event. Sometimes, you know, you get lucky, you're on a podcast or you're a guest on a blog or something like that, and then you'll see that sort of uptick. On YouTube, you may have a video go viral or something, and then it's like, boom, you get that little uptick. But yeah, there's those weird kind of events you can't really plan for. But yeah, like you said, you will hit a plateau pretty often. So yeah, site growth plan can help you figure out exactly what you need to work on.
Cool. And Hara was the other mini course, right?
Yeah, so this was kind of a cool one because I often discounted Haro and I was like, you know, it's probably not going to work out for niche sites. Talked about it on the podcast a couple times. And then a few people emailed me. They said, I've been using Haro for a couple years and it's awesome. So I got a few of those emails, interviewed somebody, and then started messing around with it myself, talking to more people. And I was like, oh, I guess this actually does work pretty well. So pulled together a course that provides you with templates that lets you know how the process works. There's a couple, you know, key things that you can do to be more successful. And I mean, I could share them here, but you get scheduled emails, and it's really important to get back to the reporters as soon as possible. If you can do that, you're way more likely to be featured in whatever story they're writing. The other thing is you could pay to get the actual requests sooner. So instead of getting them in the scheduled email, you could pay, I think it's like $50 a month, and you can like get them as soon as they're approved. So that gives you a leg up, pretty big leg up too. The other interesting thing is people don't follow directions. So I used Haro as a reporter, as you know, I was requesting people to send me information so I could see how it worked on the other side. Gave me really good insight. One of those insights is people don't follow directions. So I was like, hey, make it 2 to 3 sentences, give me a bullet point list. They just wouldn't do it. They would send me like a couple paragraphs. They just don't follow directions. So there's a couple things you could do to make sure your thing gets read. So if you could reply back and then follow directions, if people give you some instructions, follow those instructions. Otherwise, it's just not going to work out. And if you start digging around, you will find that a lot of affiliate site owners and authority site owners use Haro extensively for their link building. I think it's a great way to diversify. So if you were doing guest posting to get things that are niche specific, very related to your topic area, that's great. The Haro, it may not be as closely related from a website to website topic relationship, but you get potentially more authority. And these are often news sources or, you know, well-respected websites out there that you'd be happy to get a link from. So Haro's been really effective, and it was a very popular course when I first launched it.
Yeah, I guess. Probably should have taken a moment just to kind of explain what that was. But yeah, the, you know, the site Help a Reporter Out is where you can go and essentially you can sign up to inbox, you know, you get emails basically, don't you, from reporters looking for stories. And generally they want it pretty quick, you know, because they need to get the story out now, and they want something that's easy to if you like, copy and paste. They don't want to do any work. They're busy people. And so, you know, And you say they're very authoritative sites quite often you can get the links from. So, I absolutely understand how it can be really effective when you implement it right. It's just it can be time consuming and getting the processes right, I think, is key there, just to make sure it's an effective use of time. So,
Yep. And the two other things I could add in there. One, actually, I'll add three things. Yeah, I totally forgot to tell people what Haro was. So thanks for covering that, Mark. I show in the course how to outsource the process. So that was one of the key things that I learned from some of the people that I interviewed. It's fairly straightforward to outsource it. Now, like many things, you have to set up your systems and standard operating procedures, SOPs, ahead of time so that whoever you outsource this activity to, they know what to do. They have the information that they need so that they can reply quickly. So that's really effective to outsource it once you kind of lay the foundation of the kind of websites you want to answer back to and the kind of answers that you want to provide. Now, the other portion is I used Haro as a reporter myself and kind of flipped it upside down. I think I'm calling it the reverse Haro technique. I haven't talked about it too much, but essentially, if you are maybe wanting to do a roundup post, so these used to be really popular, roundup posts, especially in the internet marketing world, you would have people from, you kind of crowdsource the content is the idea. So for example, if I was doing a roundup for Niche Site Project, I would probably email my friends and say, hey, tell me about the trends that you think are going to be in the algorithm for Google or other search engines in 2021. And then they write back a couple sentences. I publish it. I send links to everyone. Everybody's happy, you know. Well, it turns out if you try to do that, you end up chasing people around for answers. Everyone's busy. They have a ton of emails. They don't want to answer your question. So if you try to do a roundup, it's really difficult. So I was like, I'm going to try to do sort of a roundup post, but instead of emailing my friends, I'm going to put it on Haro. And what happens is you end up with all your answers in about 24 hours. I mean, people answer really fast because of the reason I mentioned before. They want to be featured. And I figured out kind of a cool link building activity. So they would get links, but I also figured out how to get links from those folks as well. I mean, you build a relationship, and I've actually had, you know, people discover my content because I was asking for a source request is what they're called on Haro. I was asking and requesting information. So people were turned on to my content. They read it a little bit, and it was a pretty cool way to not only, you know, meet people, but to do like a roundup post with a quick turnaround time.
Awesome. Cool. So we'll put links to all of these courses in the notes as well, so you can easily find them in the future. But yeah, I guess one last question really I have for you, Doug. You know, I know you're kind of passionate about your freedom and, you know, not working for the man and things. And, you know, so I think, you know, creating content and building audience and selling courses fits really well with, you know, what that kind of lifestyle that you're after. But, you know, what is kind of your mid to like long-term plans? You know, what's your kind of mission? Do you have a plan?
Not really. And we were chatting about this before we started recording, and I was thinking, hey, this could be a good way to help me sort out my life. So I'm not 100% sure. I came back from, you know, a lot of time off over the holidays, and I was thinking, hey, I'm just going to, you know, catch up on the things I need to catch up on, and, you know, things are going fine. I'm not going to shake things up. But then I started getting, you know, some more ideas for creating more content, really. So one of those is around 30-day challenges or challenges of some sort, kind of in the self-improvement area. And that was triggered because of Dry January. I thought, well, this is an interesting thing to do. I can talk about how it impacts my sleep, my overall well-being, dealing with the fact that, you know, I'm trying to curb a habit that I've developed over the last few years. And I watch a lot of those YouTube channels. So I know I was planning on producing that video anyway. So I was like, maybe I'll put it on a new channel where I can do challenges on a more regular basis. So I'm not 100% sure, but I'm probably going to be producing those videos anyway. And the fact is, it's not the same audience. So there's a lot of people who are just interested in keyword research from me, for example. And if I start publishing self-improvement stuff, there's a very like disjointed audience. And I could probably get around that. But I also thought, hey, it would kind of be nice to just have a separate channel. So that is one of my ideas. Could be interesting. I don't want to, you know, create a ton of work for myself, but it turns out it'll probably be things that I'm interested in, kind of fun, a little higher production value. So instead of publishing, you know, one video per day, it'll be like one every 2 weeks or a month. So much longer time between videos, and I could spend more time on creating a higher quality video, really. A couple other things I thought of about podcasting. So I like doing podcasts. I have all the equipment already. I have my systems down. So adding another podcast is really probably not that much more work. I'm into the financial independence concepts. And I have a lot of friends like locally who are some of the like well-known people in the financial independence, what would you call it? Niche, I guess. So yeah. I've thought about covering that topic as well. And I've been on one or two of those podcasts and a lot of cool people. And I think there are plenty of folks to talk to. And it's another set of stories. Like some people, they want to retire so they can, you know, just be with their family. Some people, they just want to travel full time. Maybe they live in an RV or a van. And other folks, you know, everybody has their own story. So that could be interesting to do as well. And from, you know, another podcast standpoint, there's a lot of other stories that I can cover. There's a lot of other stories that I can cover. I mean, I talk to a lot of people that do, you know, affiliate marketing, and they're plucked right out of the audience, right? They're great stories. They're the most inspiring. When I was getting started, I get great feedback on those. But there's like another set of people. Maybe they are, you know, more like you, Mark, and Adam, where you've created an agency, or maybe people have created a software product. So there's a couple of different angles that I've thought of to go down that route. Now, like you said, I enjoy my freedom and stuff. So it would probably, any of those projects, I would probably put some pretty tight constraints so that I'm not, you know, overextending myself or working on things, making it a drag. But it's one of my problems. I'm a busybody. A lot of us are, you know, we'll just find work to do. If we're on a desert island, we'll think, oh, we need to clear that sand off the beach there, you know, just making up work to do it. So.
Cool. So it sounds like a lot more in front of the camera or behind the microphone kind of work.
Yeah, potentially. And I mean, some of those may go away. I know I've just been getting excited over the last couple of weeks. So, you know, there's a good chance one of those new things are going to be going on. And I'll give another couple things that are more, you know, short-term and certain. I'm doing at least a couple case studies on Niche Site Project. So I know people love case studies. One of them is a student of mine who wants to double her revenue over the next year. So I'm going to be taking her down a slightly different route from the normal add more content, add more links. And I'm going to guide her towards, you know, hopefully her own products, developing her own brand a little bit more. And then another case study is growing the site that I mentioned before around, you know, just adding more content, adding more links to a, you know, relatively modest site, where it's making a couple hundred dollars a month. It has about 35 articles, and just, hey, what happens if we give it some attention and some care?
Awesome. That sounds good. Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks for your time today, Doug. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you.
Well, where should we send people if they want to know more about you and your projects you're working on?
So I'll give you three areas. Number one, if you like YouTube, you can head over to my YouTube channel. It's just called Doug Cunnington. And my podcast is The Doug Show. I talk mostly about affiliate marketing and SEO. Some other random stuff is thrown in there. The URL is doug.show. You can also find it on all the big podcasting directories and players and that sort of thing. And then finally, Niche Site Project. That is where I blog. There's tons and tons of content. You can get all my templates and systems if you just go to the homepage, click the green button, enter your name and email address, and then you'll get all the good stuff.
Okay. Well, thanks again. Nice speaking with you.
Thanks, Mark. Really appreciate it.
Thanks again for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If you're listening to the podcast version of this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please rate and review, as this will allow us to grow our audience and create more shows like this one. If you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe to the channel and click on the bell to be the first to know about any new episodes that we release. Until the next episode, goodbye.